Hey, Dave!
Yes, Christy?
Have you heard about Patreon?
Well, I know. What does it do?
Well, Patreon is a great way that you can support the Greedies and other NeoZazz projects. Did you know that?
I didn't. Actually, yeah, I do.
But Patreon is a great way that you can help support us and let us know what you think of our show. And Aviva, hey!
Hey, Christy!
Hey, did you know that the Greedies has its own Facebook page?
Does it now?
It does. The Greedies has its own Facebook page, so check us out. We do have Twitter as well, but Dave Fox is the only one that does anything with it because I don't understand Twitter.
Solid promo.
From the creator of Star Wars, from the director of Cocoon, a world is awakening.
Why, with the strength of my great army, can you not find one little child?
It's a dangerous world. That's why we need your help.
Your journey has just begun.
Willow. Whoa. Heroes come in all sizes. But adventure. Doesn't come any bigger than this.
Find the child. Find the child.
We are not afraid of you. After them.
You're gonna get us killed.
I trust him completely.
The next great adventure.
You are great.
Willow. Coming in May.
Hello and welcome to The Greedies, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies from the 1980s still hold up today. Whether you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. Today we're going to be discussing 1988's Willow, directed by Ron Howard and starring Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer, and Joanne Whaley. Kilmer, later. My name is Christy, and I am joined by my fellow 80s pecs, Dave.
Oh, we are like two tiny French Jar Jar Binkses.
And Aviva.
Hello, my little bobbins.
Now, on the Greedies, we like to take a moment to find out each panelist's history with the film that we're analyzing so everybody knows where everybody's coming from. So, Dave, what is your history with Willow?
Well, as you know, I was am a huge Star Wars fan. And so this
movie
came out, and it was right in the dead time when there was no more Star Wars, right? And this was the next project Lucas did after Star Wars. And so I was so hyped up for this. I bought the storybook with all the pictures. I read it over and over again. I saw the movie when it came out. I don't know if I saw it again in the theaters. Probably not. Didn't do that too much back then. But I was super into this movie when it came out. And then I haven't really watched it much since then.
And Aviva?
I'm pretty confident I remember correctly seeing this movie in the theaters and then later watching it at home on VHS and DVDs and whatnot. But there's just one quote from the movie that has always stuck in my head, and I say it all the time, even to this day, mostly because of my cat's name. One of my cat's names is Willow. I did not name her. It was fate. She came to me that way. But I always liked this movie, and I had no idea until I was researching yesterday that this was a George Lucas film. I didn't realize Ron Howard directed it, because when I was 9 years old, none of that was important to me. I had no concept, but I always really liked the movie. I enjoyed it. So I was happy to rewatch it again yesterday.
I will have to say that I have not seen this movie ever. I don't know how. I think I've probably seen it like in passing, like somebody's been watching it and I've like walked through the room or something, but I have never really seen it. I think I usually in my head get this one mixed up with Legend. I don't know why.
Interesting.
there.
Huh.
I don't know. I think it's because of the whole, I think it has a lot to do with Top Gun. I blame Top Gun for everything because Tom Cruise, of course, was in Legend and Val Kilmer's in this. So, yeah, that's my excuse and I'm going to it. But my first time watching it was today, and we're all kind of sequestered because of the lovely coronavirus. So this is going to be the time of new podcasts.
Yeah, this was interesting. I happened to watch this last week because it's on Disney Plus.
And yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I haven't seen this in a while. And then when you're like, oh, who wants to do Willow? I'm like, oh,
hey,
good timing.
Hey, I watched that. Yes, Disney Plus has allowed me to revisit a lot. Like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and all kinds of things that I haven't watched in so long.
They got some good classics on there.
Yeah. All right.
And as they continue to take over the world, they keep adding more.
I know. And then if Apple buys them, then everything will be owned. All right. So let's talk about the synopsis of the movie. So we get to know about, there's reading in the beginning of it. There's that.
Yep.
The 80s were a very read a lot in the beginning kind of time, because this is now the second movie I've watched this week that had writing in the beginning of it.
Like, literacy is important.
Reading is fundamental. The evil queen, Bavmorda, wields black magic to conquer the land and enslave the people. And she finds out about a prophecy saying that there is going to be a child that will overthrow her and mean the end of her time as sorcerer, kind of like sorceress. I'm mixing it up with damn Masters of the Universe.
I was doing that the whole time too, and then realized Masters of the Universe came out afterwards, but yeah. I was getting confused.
So because she's a feared of the child being born, she puts out, she arrests all of the pregnant women and checks all the babies after they're born so that they can catch them. Now, they don't say what they do with the babies that don't have a mark.
I think they just go back home.
Maybe. Because, she'd be stupid.
If you kill all the children in your kingdom, then you're going to run out of people to rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kingdom to rule.
So before the baby is born and she's got the mark on her arm, and there's a very sympathetic midwife that feels for the mother and takes the baby. And she takes her so long that the baby actually grows a full head of hair.
That is a mop, man.
That was a lot of hair.
And the funny thing is, it was a wig.
Yeah, they wigged the baby.
There was no reason to wig the baby.
No, except I guess with the big, shock of red curls, you couldn't tell that it was five different babies they were using.
True. So she ends up getting pretty much cornered by these big devil dogs and somehow uniquely seems to somehow find a patch of loose river grass, and she sends her down the river, a.k.a. Moses, and sends... It's very biblical. I'm not saying that George Lucas does not have any original ideas, but I am.
The perfectly made little water raft for the baby that just happened to appear.
What's a good way to get this baby out of here? Oh, I could stick him on a raft. Okay. So he goes down and he gets to Warwick Davis. Oh my God. Warwick Davis looks so young. So very
young. He was 17. Right? He was 17 during filming.
Wow.
He was young.
Yeah, he was only 10 years older than the little ones playing as kids.
Jeez.
How cute are they?
I
love his little kids.
Those little kids are so adorable. So he's a farmer and amateur magician. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
So he doesn't want to keep the baby, but of course his wife loves on the baby and takes pretty much they disregard him from the very beginning. No, like, we're taking this baby. The baby's in here.
Yeah. He clearly shows he has no control over his family from the start.
Yeah, nope.
He was very clear. You are not to fall in love with this child.
And they go to a fair or something in the council.
Hobbiton?
I keep
in the Shire.
In the Shire, I keep trying not to call it by Lord of the Rings terms, but so hard not to.
Yeah,
but he takes them and they're having like a fair, and he's doing his magic tricks, and he tries to disappear a pig, and it's funny. But he's wanting to be chosen as the next apprentice wizard.
Yeah,
sorcerer wizard.
Sorcerer.
And in comes Mr. Billy Barty.
I love him.
Billy Barty,
I love him so much.
Who has been in so many things in the 80s. And he,
UHF.
He pretty much makes them choose fingers to decide who has the gift to become.
Yeah. He's trying to pick an apprentice. He's not giving them anything to go on.
Nope.
You know, it's not like he's teaching them anything about how to use their intuition.
Yeah.
Right.
Nope. Just
it's
saying.
It's all about. So it's like about self-worth and knowing that you have the power inside,
ooh.
But you have to know that.
Yep.
Right.
You have to already know that.
You already have to.
He asked Willow later, which finger did you initially want to pick? Instinct. And he was like, well, my own.
But
he was like, you should have gone with your gut instinct.
Well, and also we'll see.
A little late now there.
Yeah. Thanks.
Right. Well, too bad. Over.
Here, have some acorns.
Here's three.
So during this fair, they also get pretty much attacked by these devil dogs, and they realize that the baby is the key. So then
how did they realize that again?
I'm not. Oh, because they went after someone with a baby.
Okay.
They went and sniffed on a baby, or they looked at a baby, something where they were like, they were drawn to the baby. It looks like they're just going to the babies. And then
are some smart dogs if they're like baby sniffing dogs or something.
They're devil dogs.
Kind of.
Because
they were very close to the baby on many occasions and didn't sniff it out. So
yeah.
Right.
I don't know. They're not the best trained.
They are not truffle
dogs.
They are not truffle pigs.
No.
So they decide that they need to, he goes to the council. And they realize she's got to be taken outside the limits of this. And I kind of like the way that Billy Barty pretty much admits that the bones tell him nothing. Yeah, because it's not real. It's not real. Do you love this baby? Yeah, I kind of do. Okay, then the bones have chosen. And then the other various characters that go with him, ending up with just Migosh. They end up, I am kind of astounded that they spend so much time where they meet Mad Mardigan, Val Kilmer. They seem to spend a lot of time around that cage.
That felt like a really long scene. I was like, are we moving on yet? When do we get him out of the cage and move on with the story?
When are we getting moving trees? Oh, wrong. Damn it.
His name is so long that they say it so many times, the scene lasts forever.
They don't call him just Mad. Marty.
Oh, Marty.
It's Mad Mardigan. Mad Mardigan.
I stopped writing it in my notes. Just call him Val.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a 4-syllable name. That's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That dogs and cats would already lose you by Mad Mard.
Done.
You know, Lucas was just like looking in his notebook from Star Wars, all the weird names and stuff that he didn't end up using and using them here.
I didn't get to name it this. Mad Mardigan. So they decide, even though they don't really trust it, they decide to trust the baby with Mad Mardigan. So he goes off with the baby, and Willow and Migosh start to head home. Well, then as they're going home, and he's questioning it, they are attacked by a clan of brownies. And
Tinkerbells.
And Tinkerbells.
Yep.
And then they see the baby being carried over being carried by a bird, being flown by a brownie. And the brownie fairy queen of the forest, Cherlindria, appears to Willow and pretty much gives him his quest. Tells him he's been chosen to protect the baby, and she has a name. Her name is Allura. Allura Dannon.
Allura Dannon.
And she is magical, and she is a princess. So she gives him a magic wand. Awesome. and tells him yeah. to go find the sorceress Finn Raziel for help. And he said, she sends along Rick Overton and Kevin Pollak.
Which I had no idea that was Kevin Pollak, and I love him so much. And so rewatching it with that knowledge and all of a sudden realizing who it was, it like brought a whole new level of like wonder and amazement to the horrible green screens they used for them. But I loved it so much more.
The compositing was so dire. It was hard to watch, especially when they were trying to do something moving. Yeah. They just couldn't track him.
I finally had to say, this is actually pretty good for 1988, I think.
I don't know.
And I just kind of like went for it. But
so it was between the bad special effects and the horrible comic routines they were doing. I just, every time they were on screen, even though I love Kevin Pollak as well, it just drags.
It was a little rough. they actually were nominated for an Oscar for visual effects.
Well.
There are some really good visual effects in this.
Yeah.
Just not that.
Probably just not that. Part,
who was their competition? That's what I'm wondering.
That I do not see. But I do know. Well, I don't think they won it. They just got nominated. But I read somewhere that the transformations, I think, with Raziel later, I believe that some of that was what they got nominated for, because it was some of the first times they did
developed that software to do that for this movie.
If only they had had that for Lady Hawk.
That looked pretty good, actually.
Oh, Lady Hawk. So they end up, you know, trying to travel. They've lost Mad Mardigan, of course, but then they find him again in women's drag as he's having some time.
So he had enough time to get dressed up in a dress with fake boobs and makeup, but he didn't have enough time to jump out a window. I know.
Thank you. That was just a gratuitous Val Kilmer and drag scene.
Just to end up in a skirt. Just to put him in a
skirt. Why not?
Because he was.
I think he wanted Han Solo in a skirt and couldn't.
Couldn't get Indy in a skirt.
You know what we could do? Val Kilmer. He'll wear a skirt.
I heard he does anything now. Okay. So we end up, he ends up getting, they end up all getting captured by Sorsha. Played by Val Kilmer's future ex-wife. And who is also Bav Morda's daughter. Mm-hmm. So they pretty much have them. Oh, they've already found. They find Raziel, who is a rodent by now. She's already been turned into a rodent.
A possum. Some kind of a possum.
So pretty much they're all captured and taken a trek to get back to Bav Morda's stronghold.
Like, seriously.
Like, long.
They go up Everest to get back there.
Oh, my God. And
the baby's going to be 14 by the time we get back.
The baby is going to be the age of being able to take care of everything. Like, okay, well, now I'm 21. Right. Boom! I'm in charge.
And I was wondering why they were not just, like, killing the babies. They had to do this ritual. And I guess the second time I watched it, she explained that the ritual will purge the baby's soul or something, so that I guess if they just killed the baby, it would find another baby to be born into or something.
I missed that because I was trying to figure out why they were doing this trek instead of just killing the baby and being done with it.
Right.
Aside from the fact that we needed the rest of the movie, but
as far as like queen overthrowing baby prophecies goes, this one has a lot of waving hands over it.
So then we go ahead and Mad Mardigan gets doused by a love potion and is
as happens
because Kevin Pollak can't control his powder, and he pretty much just declares his love for Sorsha, and somehow they all get out, and
she buys it.
Yeah, she does.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, she does.
For such a badass, like, evil princess, she fell for that pretty quickly.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So much so that she's pissed when he takes it back.
Yeah.
So they get to another castle, the Tir Azlin, but the castle is under Bav Morda's spell. And Willow keeps trying to transform Raziel back into human form several times. Sorsha and her army arrive, but so does the army of Galadorn.
With Mad Mortigan's ex-bestie, Eric, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Eric, the Viking-looking dude.
Eric the Viking, yeah. And he, the guy playing him, I saw this in the trivia somewhere. What's his name?
Oh, Gavin O'Hurley?
I can't find his name right now. Yeah, Gavin O'Hurley, he played Richie Cunningham's older brother in the first season of Happy Days.
The missing older brother, Chuck. The
magical disappearing magical Chuck.
So during the battle, pretty much Sorsha is in love with Mad Mardigan and changes sides, flips on him.
Yep.
Really doesn't explain that very well.
No, she's having like a teen rebellion moment against her mom finally.
Yeah.
I mean, her mom's a bitch. Yeah. Like, she is nasty to her, treats her badly, abuses her verbally and physically. Like, she's a horrible mother, and it took this long and one dude high on some love potion just flip her.
Well, she saw Top Gun. She knows what's up.
She's playing. She's hanging with the boys. General Kale comes and gets Allura, gets her away, and takes her to Nakmar. Now, Willow, Mad Mardigan, Sorsha, the brownies, and the sorceress, who's now a goat.
Which this is where my favorite quote comes from.
Oh, yeah.
It's so silly. It's so dumb. My favorite quote from the entire movie is, as a goat, she goes, "Willow, you idiot." Oh, sorry. I love that one. I love it. I say that
really
to my
leaned
cow.
Into the goat voice too. Yeah.
Anyway,
Aviva's next impersonation will be Stevie Nicks. Okay, Willow.
Yep.
Willow finally gets Raziel back to her true form, and she puts a spell on the camp to protect them from Bav Morda. And they begin the battle. Dun, 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 dun.
That's because Bav Morda turned them all into pigs.
Yeah.
She was turning everybody into pigs, including her daughter. And they were doing like these interesting transformations too, which was actually kind of cool. And then, and then he finally gets her changed so she can get everyone back to human form. It's one of those, like, his great moment of overcoming his self-doubt or whatever.
Yeah, the way the magic works is so kind of weird in this. It's like he had to say the right words and concentrate, but it was also painful for him. And
yeah.
He also had to use...
He had to believe it.
...blood to make a potion and that we never really saw.
Yeah.
And if Bav Morda can turn everyone into pigs instantaneously like that, she could probably kill him. You know, it's not like... She's very overpowered.
One word, midichlorians. So they have the big battle, and Willow manages to save Allura from the murderous ritual, finally. And she is destroyed by her own magic.
What exactly happened there?
I couldn't follow.
It looked to me that she got struck by lightning while holding the wand, and that's what killed her. I don't know.
She said, "May God strike me down if I'm a virgin." Woo!
Or maybe you're right. Maybe the interruption of the ritual and the spilling of the bowls or whatever caused the magic to reverse on her or something.
She spilled the bowls over. She had the wand in her hand. I like to think that the wand was like, haha, you cannot overpower me with your bad magic. And it started the whole thing of her being killed.
Yeah.
I don't know. My personal interpretation.
It's a little weird that, like, our titular main character, who got third billing by does exactly, like, two things this entire movie that advance the story. And that one is, like, he hides the baby and does his little magic trick.
Yep.
And I don't know what the other one is.
The other one is when he changes Raziel back into her human form.
That's the one, yeah.
But those are, like, his two bits.
Everything else is him just yelling Mad Mardigan
and
help.
Running.
Yeah. But somehow throughout all of that too, he was part of Mad Mardigan coming through it from being just I don't give a crap about anyone but myself into, oh, I care about you guys and I'm actually in love with you, even though I thought it was just fake potion.
Yeah, he has a story arc.
Yeah. Yeah, he has like an actual character arc.
So,
Mad Mardigan shot first.
So in the end, Willow leaves the baby with in the caring arms of Mad Mardigan and Sorsha, and returns.
Whose hair looks splendid.
Oh,
at the
yes,
end.
It.
She has crappy, like bad helmet hair the whole movie until the end, and then they really did it up nicely.
They're like, "Let's brush this, shall we, Joanne?"
Yeah, and we'll curl it for you.
And Willow returns back to his village in his family with a book of magic to study, so now he can learn to actually make the pig disappear. Other than just forcing it under the table. So let's look at some trivia. According to Warwick Davis, this film had the largest ever casting call for little people, between 225 and 240.
And it shows.
I have to say, I was really impressed by the whole way that whole village was treated. It was kind of like, it wasn't cheapened. It was just authentic. Like, you could see people having just authentic relationships, and just, you're looking in a village. And it wasn't...
Yeah, they just happened to be...
It wasn't people. Cliched or made a big deal of or anything like that. It was just a bunch of people.
I mean, the big fat mayor guy or whoever he was gold, a little gold. One
yeah,
note.
Yeah. The devil dogs were actually Rottweilers in rubber masks and suits.
Yeah, I'm curious how that worked. Yeah. I can't imagine... That's something that we would ever do nowadays. Yeah.
This actually was written specifically for Warwick Davis after Return of the Jedi. George Lucas specifically was like, I want to write a movie after you, and made one and wrote this one.
Yeah. And the original title? Munchkins.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, they changed
yes,
it.
Yes, they did.
Yep.
Now, the large group of pigs outside the castle apparently continuously tried mating, so they had to keep keep throwing buckets of water on them.
Cold water, I believe.
Yeah.
I read somewhere. Cold buckets of cold water to calm them down.
Yep. This is the first feature film to use morphing from ILM.
Right.
Yeah.
As Val Kilmer was getting out of his crow cage between takes, the chain snapped and the cage came down on his foot. So that's why he is limping when they get to the island.
Yeah, I noticed that the last time I watched it after reading that trivia.
Mm-hmm.
The woman that played Finrazil, Patricia Hayes, I was like, man, where do I know her from? And of course, she's the woman in Fish Called Wanda that Michael Palin has to kill because she's a witness.
Warwick Davis's future in-law, Peter Burroughs, and his wife, Samantha Davis, appear as villagers. So his future father-in-law. Mm-hmm. People who would become his family
and future wife.
Also Kenny Baker.
Val Kilmer ad-libbed much of his dialogue. There was a theory that Peter Dinklage was in this, but that
I saw that
timing would be a little
I don't
timing
buy
would be wrong like he'd be yeah. too
no I did after reading that Kenny Baker was in this I did notice his face when they show he's playing the drums in the little band.
Oh, gotcha. We were mentioning how Warwick Davis, it sucks that he was third. George Lucas also felt that it wasn't fair since he's the title role and has the most screen time, but he was pretty much overruled.
But I was reading that was pretty standard for the time. So like there were some people that got lower billing for like the movie Platoon and some other big movies that put not title role, but some of the main roles beneath, like Marlon Brando has a tendency to get top billing in his movies. He was one Godfather, that kept bumping people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Godfather, Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, that one.
John Cusack tested for the role of Mad Mardigan, but lost.
Do you imagine?
No.
I know.
John Cusack in that role?
No.
He's like, all right, give me your top five sword fights.
In preparation for the movie, Warwick Davis had to learn a modified accent, how to take care of a baby, how to ride a horse, how to sword fight, and how to perform magic. And that prepared him for his entire career.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of accent he was trying to do, because sometimes it seemed okay, and sometimes it felt like he was trying to do an American accent, and it was just really weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were talking about the twins, the babies wearing wigs. They did wear wigs, which was applied using syrup. Because
so you don't hurt the little
baby heads.
Don't hurt the baby heads. With wig adhesive.
He is not the only one. Warwick Davis also wore a wig for the movie. That was not. Right.
Thank goodness his hair was horrible.
I know. So because of slow production during filming, the babies outgrew the props and the carrier that Willow had on his back, so they needed a new baby quickly.
Did you see the notes? I read that because Warwick Davis has a limp, the baby actually got motion sickness and puked. Yes. Poor little baby.
Let's see.
Yeah. So the baby pukes on the big guy, the town elder, whatever he is. And then at the end of the movie, he gets shit on by a bird, too. Like, that guy gets both barrels.
He deserved it. He's like the douche of the cast of the roles.
Now, they had a 13-pound animatronic baby capable of moving its head and opening its mouth for the action scenes, but the baby weighed more than the actual baby. So, and they had to have a more flexible prop where Willow falls with it, of course. I'm like, no, you...
That animatronic baby is now Baby Yoda.
Yes! Recycle.
The twins who played Baby Allura never acted again. Mm-hmm. But
they were done.
But he did take Warwick Davis did have a picture with one of them from 2007. And she said that she played the baby for the scene shot in New Zealand.
Yeah, it wasn't one of the two babies you just talked about. It was like a whole other baby.
One of the twins went to study forensic science, and they don't know what the other one has done.
That's my favorite part. Really? In 2020, you can't figure out what happened to the other baby?
Nope. So Ron Howard actually passed on directing Cocoon the Return to direct this film. I think he made a wise choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ron Howard.
Thanks, Ron Howard.
We appreciate it.
There are a lot of things between this and the BBC version of Prince Caspian and the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, because Warwick Davis is in it, and he wears the same boots.
And so is his wife. Or the woman, not his real life, the woman who plays Kaya, his wife in the movie, they said she was, I believe she was also in that Prince Caspian show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't believe she's his wife in that, but... They're in that together. Castmates.
There are three Wilhelm screams.
Oh, yes. Yes, there are.
Mm-hmm. And I heard everyone.
I made a couple of notes just for like moments that I thought were semi-amusing and also kind of annoying. I don't know if you noticed when they escaped on the sled, which first of all, they're escaping on a sled. The other people had horses, really, that they got away. But brilliant, brilliant, good, quick thinking. But then Mad Mardigan falls off the sled and ends up rolling as a giant snowball.
Yeah.
To like the hut. Like, come on. It was a little on the ridiculous side.
Slapstick.
I mean, maybe they were trying to go for that like goofy, silly bit because they have like the brownies and now we have a giant snowball. But
yeah,
it was very like cartoony. And seemed odd.
It's definitely making it very kid friendly. Like if you were a kid, you wouldn't really see this stuff or notice the little intricacies of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you damn sure do as an adult.
I want to edit that sled scene together with Christmas Vacation. I think that'll be pretty good.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Recycle.
We all got time.
I did also like, right. I don't know if you noticed it, but the very first time when they first meet Matt Mardigan, he's in a cage and he's trying to convince them that he can take care of a baby and he loves babies. And he looks at Allura Dannon and he kisses at her and she like raises her eyebrow at him.
Her little face.
They just got her making this little face that was so funny. And I was like, wow.
I can definitely see why they chose those twins because they have the most.
Yeah.
Like.
Very expressive faces. For
like, if you had to have a convention of like good acting babies, you'd probably put that one and then the one from Labyrinth second.
Yeah, I'm down. I agree. I concur.
We got time. We'll rank our Movie babies.
We should do best baby actors.
Best baby actors.
Movie babies.
I also really like Source's blade. She had like a really badass sword.
Yeah.
Like with a big, like crazy serrated giant. I don't know. I
thought was she cool. accidentally stabbed into one of the stuntman's feet?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that sucker going to my foot.
No.
Or anywhere near my
no.
feet. It's massive.
We are ready for our time to rate this movie. So we're going to rate it on a scale of 5 based on our original viewing and then our 2020 viewing. So, Dave, go ahead.
Back in the day, I was really into this movie, but not as much as Star Wars, of course. So I think I would have given it a 4 out of 5. I was old enough to see some of the cracks, but I still loved having – and it's fantasy. I was in D&D. It was in all of my wheelhouses. So probably 4 out of 5. Now, it's definitely showing its signs of age. I watched it again last night to really take notes on it, and the third act really drags. Mm-hmm. And while there are some, you know, like the two-headed dragon thing, really cool stop-motion effect. The morphing effect is really good. There's some really good special effects in this, but there's some that really don't hold up, as we've mentioned. Yeah. And then with the brownies, I could have done with a little bit less of the brownies. But on the whole, a lot of it holds up. It's pretty good. It's shot really well. The cinematographer went on to do a whole bunch of stuff, and his last movie was V for Vendetta. And I think it was directed well for the most part. And I don't know. It's still pretty good, but I got to go down to a 2.5, okay. I think.
Aviva, what do you give Willow?
I agree with you. I think back in the day, being a young lass, just enjoying the film, I probably would have given it a 4 from back then. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny, and I loved, like, I don't know. I'm always, I love a good underdog story. And then, of course, you know, Val Kilmer, so cute. And so I always thought that was great too, even with his bad hair. So I think it was definitely a 4. And now watching it again last night, I'm going to bring that down to a 3. I think, yeah, there were some really great effects that were, you know, good for the time. And I almost want to see what they could do with them if you were watching it now. Don't do a remake because there's too many of those. But I'm curious. Yeah, don't do it. But I'm curious, like, what they could have done nowadays. And I agree, too. Like, watching the brownies at first, I was like, oh, yeah, Kevin Pollak, this is so funny. And by the end of the movie, I was like, why are they still here?
Yeah.
Why didn't someone, like, not, like, flick them off like a flea or something? And there were just some of those, like, really cheesy moments. I was like, this doesn't even make sense. This is, especially last night, knowing it was George Lucas and I love Star Wars. And, like, be like, why is this a little bit goofy and, like, a little awkwardly silly in some moments, but then very serious action in others? So I'm going to take it down to a 3.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I do have one more thing. At the very end, when they take the baby to Bav Morda and she's getting ready to do the ritual, the good guy army shows up and they're like, all right, we'll attack tomorrow. And I'm like, wait, you're going to wait like 12 hours to attack? How long is this ritual?
She's already got the baby. Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm with you. I'm like, why? Just do it. Just go for it.
Right. Oh, we need to build a bunch of siege engines and catapults.
We need a shrubbery.
Better
Trojan horse. Since I didn't see it originally when it came out and just saw it recently, I only have 1 score. And I can kind of guess that little preteen middle school me would have loved it, because I also thought Val Kilmer was a cutie patootie. But now, unfortunately, having adult goggles on, one, I do really love Warwick Davis. I am so glad they don't put any prosthetics on him or put fur on him or anything else. He's just him, which I appreciate the hell out of.
Yeah, he usually doesn't.
No,
get to do
and
that.
I for that, yeah. And that kind of gives me a little bit more. I would probably, I agree with you, Dave, with a 2.5, because as much as I love that, it does show some issues with George Lucas's storytelling style.
Yeah, it's
like watching the Emperor and walk around naked. That I have to say that does kind of tear it for me. So let's see. So we have the 2.5 plus 2.5 equals 8. So divided by 3, so that gives it a 2.7, rounded up. So it doesn't quite hold up. We usually use 3 as our marker for, yeah, this is definitely, if it's a 3 or above, then yeah, it's definitely holds up. But yeah, there is just something about this, even though usually when I think about like fantasy or things that don't have, that aren't time specific, like they're not set in the 80s, it's sometimes a little easier to say yes, they hold up because they are timeless. But this This has a lot of excuse me. This has a lot of good scenes and good elements to it.
But it doesn't stick overall. It doesn't. It's not smooth. But and you know, I think I give it that extra little half point too for nostalgia, which is one of the challenges I have when we talk about these films. Because anytime they have some kind of meaning to me from the past, that like it automatically gives a little something because I still enjoyed watching it again. But yeah, I'm good. I'm feeling good about our score. I feel like it's pretty fair.
Cool. Awesome. Then thank you, Dave. And thank you, Aviva, for joining me and having this connection outside of our sequestering to our own homes.
That's right. See, we can social distance and be social.
Yes.
That's right.
So thanks for listening to The Greatest, and join us next week.